Welcome. Good morning. Thanks for coming down. Oh, we need this a little higher. My name is Rob Peretti. I work for SaaSCom Marketing, and we're the representatives for CubeTech in North America. As a first-time attendee, it's been a real pleasure to talk to many of you and get a great feeling of the passion that you have for preservation of sound recordings, and that's been quite gratifying. This morning, we're going to talk more than just about Dobbin. I know Dobbin was the item in the program. We'll end up with Dobbin, but we're going to talk about the entire process that CubeTech allows for archiving and digitizing sound. We'll be talking about multi-stream ingestion, automated collection of metadata related to both the sound recording and the sound carrier, and automated batch DSP processing for large sound repositories, and basically discuss an entire integrated approach to sound archiving and the preservation of that sound. First, I'd like to start with a bit of background on the company, make some introductions. With me this morning, on my far left, is Jörg Huppert. Jörg is the Director of Research and Development and is the founder of CubeTech and Huppert Digital Audio, which was founded in 1990. And to my direct left is Jerome Lucas, who's been with the company since 2000 and is the international sales manager. Jerome will be up in a little while to show you something about Dobbin. CubeTech is located on the campus, high-tech campus of Bremen in Germany, and where they have some very interesting neighbors in the digital and computer media space. And since 1990, they've been developing digital products, mainly software computer products, but also hardware. And the company I work with have been working with the folks at CubeTech since 1997. we're known around the world. We're very proud to be associated with some of the leading companies in the world for archives, for restoration, mastering. These are a group of national-based archives. Most of these customers are very happy repeat customers. In fact, I understand that Screen Sound just bought their 8th Quadriga system. In Europe, a lot of the archives are located at broadcasters, especially radio stations. So we have a large group of European broadcasters and North American. A large percentage of the recorded music archives are with those folks. Falling behind here. We have a lot of other restoration companies as well. Some are sort of private sector service for hire companies that are found in voice, recorded music, film restoration. We have a fair number of folks in Hollywood that use our systems to restore film, soundtracks for film. And we have the cream of the crop in the mastering world as well. Because of the quality of the processing and the high resolution that we work with, it's also a choice simple system in the mastering world. I don't know if you recognize any of those folks up there, but they do most of the pop and classical and jazz records, at least in North America. There's a similar list, of course, in Europe and in other areas. We're also involved with a lot of other manufacturers, sort of as an OEM of signal processing Sorry?
Too much advertising.
Too much advertising? Okay. I think it lends itself to the type of work that we do in terms of signal processing. Many people will recognize some of those companies, and it relates to the type of work that we do and the markets that we're in as well. The product line started with the Audio Cube. The Audio Cube is a hardware-software platform, and it's used for the mastering markets, for the restoration and surround markets. In 1999, Quadriga was released, first version of Quadriga, which is our archive solution. We also have something called a Media Inspector, which is can be used as part of a larger Quadriga system to automate the loading, the mass capturing of either U-matics through the 1630 format. This is typically used for the record labels. All of the CDs, the source tapes, are on a 3/4-inch digital format. And CD jukeboxes as well. This handles huge amounts of streams simultaneously, and towards the end of the presentation, we'll talk about a project that that uses Media Inspector. We also have products in the speech enhancement and forensic for voice, something called Phonix, which was delivered in 2004. And in 2005, the Digital Error Checker was released, which is basically, it says audio firewall there, but it's a automated checker of digital files. It tells you about problems within actual digital files as a result of transfer errors or media errors, digital media errors. And finally, we reached Dobbin, which is our latest product. Dobbin is a very scalable rendering system and processing system for mass storage systems. It allows you to manipulate hundreds of thousands of files, if required, in a automated, unattended fashion. Uses a very interesting Visio type of GUI to create the batch processes, and we'll actually get into that in more detail later in the presentation. So I'm going to talk about Quadriga. I think Quadriga is from our product line, one of the most important products that we can offer for archiving, in that it represents the starting point of an archive, the digitization and the capture of metadata relating to both the actual media itself, so the sound carrier, and the sound. Quadriga was developed by CubeTech and the IRT in Europe, and the main purpose was to, first of all, to create a one-to-one copy or a digital clone of the recorded audio, the original sound carrier. However, it does a little more than just capturing a WAV file. It stores a lot of information about the nature of the original source and the transcription of that source. So we actually can connect to the tape recorder or the turntable, the DAT machine, cassette player, etc., and derive information about what's going on during the playback of that media and the digitization of that audio. So we create a digital clone. It automatically generates important metadata about the digitization, and it allows you to automate the process of creating listening copies in various formats. and is a jump-off point to performing things like restoration or distribution of those assets. It will supervise the entire workflow of the digitization process. There's a lot of specialized modules that let the operator deal with every legacy format out there, and provides a method to keep an audit trail of any processes that you do as well. Some of the features that Quadriga has is, of course, the complete logging of material, automated monitoring of both the record and the playback. The system lets you actually record in the background while you're monitoring your recording in the foreground. And what I mean by that is during the record, you hear something that you need to listen to again right away. You can actually locate that problem and listen to it and while the recording is continuing in the background. If you think that there's something a little strange, you can stop the transcription. If everything's fine, you can switch back to the stream that you're actually recording and continue monitoring it. So it's really, they've thought a lot about the actual process of digitization and try to maintain an efficient workflow. And during that process, we create a lot of metadata, and that metadata can be is stored in the quality chunk of the BWF and can be exportable as an XML file. So a big part of the concept of Quadriga is to create an efficient workflow and make it easy for operators to do. We recognize that there's a wide range of skills at the various facilities, and Quadriga accommodates the workflows where you have different people doing different tasks within a digitization project. And each system can actually do four parallel streams at one time. The little graphics there are just showing that you can either have four of one type of media, or you can actually mix and match them. So if you want, you can have a couple of tapes and an RDAT, if that's the nature of your particular archive. We'll leave this slide up for a bit because this is the main interface for the actual Quadriga input. This import module is actually a tape module, so it's used to interface to various quarter-inch machines. And the machines that we use allow us to extract certain information from the actual tape recorder. For example, if you have a bad splice, the Studer tape machines have a way of telling if there's a transparency on the tape. So that information is timestamped while you're actually recording the audio. I'll just point out the different sections of the import module. At the bottom dark gray area is your transport control. You see there's two sets of buttons there. The bottom set are actually controlling your transport. In this case, it's a Studer machine, but it could be a cassette player, a DAT machine, a CD player. And then above it is the transports for Quadriga. The middle section are a number of meters. It lets you look at what's going on with level, with phase, and there's an actual waveform display below. Earlier when I said you could switch between what's being recorded and what's playing back, that waveform changes color. So if you locate Quadriga to another spot to listen, it'll turn to a different color, and then when you want to go back to monitoring the actual recorded stream, it switches again. So you always have a good status indicator of what you're listening to and what's actually going on. On the right-hand side, the sort of teal green area there, there's a part of the what we call the analog observer that calculates various various audio components like sound to noise ratio, what the dynamic range is. These things are obviously averages over the tape, so those values are actually changing as the recording is going on, as it's analyzing the audio. There are items like DC offsets, if you're clipping samples on your converter, what the azimuth situation is, what the balance is, the bandwidth. Those parameters also can have triggers so that if there one of those values falls below or goes above a certain value, it changes color. So it gives you a visual indicator of what's going on, and you're free to set that criteria as you see fit. If the sound to noise ratio changes dramatically all of a sudden, you may want to investigate what's going on, as an example. Or if all of a sudden you've got a certain number of samples clipped, it'll turn red, and you might want to start the transcription over and turn the gain down before the A to D converter. On the left-hand side is the log of all the time-stamped events that we detect. There are a large number of artifacts that we can detect in real time, clicks, pops, hum, hiss. And what happens as soon as one of those events are triggered, an item is entered into the log. So while you're recording, you would actually see a scrolling list of items popping up on the left-hand side of that window. Each one of those events can be prioritized as well in terms of how critical they are. So, and this is also user-defined, and one of the actual columns there is the priority, and you can sort them in order of priority to see what kind of problems you have, the nature of the problems, how critical the errors are. And those can also be used as location points. So once again, during the record process, if you heard some kind of static click, which may not have been on the actual program, you can locate on that, and it will automatically jump the quadriga to that point, because of course it's random access, and you can monitor it. And then once you're okay with what's going on, you can switch back to the record and continue, or you might have a problem in the actual transcription, and at that point you'd stop the process, find out what's going on with your tape recorder, et cetera, and continue on. Each one of the items also allows you to type in comments in real time. So if on the selected item over there, which is it's a manual entry. Down in the bottom section there, you'll see some, I wish I had a pointer right now. Just below the list on the left-hand side, there's a section where you can type in some comments. So that's the input module. The key about our input modules is they're very similar across all the different media that you might have. It doesn't matter whether it's tape or DAT. Of course, you know, there's a few minor changes relating to what you're actually dealing with in terms of the actual device, but the user is presented with a unified interface, so they don't have to reinvent the wheel. Once you learn how to use one import module, the rest of them are fairly straight ahead. We have a number of software modules. I mentioned that Quadriga was the first version of Quadriga was introduced in 1999. So we've had a fair amount of feedback from the field, and that resulted in a new version at the end of 2004, early 2005. Some of the new features is that it's now inherently multilingual. It supports Unicode. It has a comprehensive user manager. I was mentioning earlier that we have a system to we can manage users based on their privileges, based on perhaps their skill set. You might have someone who's good at setting certain parameters up and others that are just simply doing transfers. There's a fair amount of administration tools to determine who has access to different features. You can give access to all or appropriate privileges to different people. They've optimized the wave display, extended certain XML import and export functions, and most importantly, they also introduced the Quadriga machine control module, which is that big blue box in the middle. That is a piece of hardware that connects to the computer that gives you a fair amount of flexibility to do custom interfacing. I mean, we recognize there's lots of gear out there. It's pretty difficult to build a custom box for every box that's been made over, you know, recorded history. So this gives you a method of doing some custom interfacing between different devices. There's a couple of modules I'll just sort of get into slightly more detail. The DAT module is of interest. It has a lot of pretty cool features. There are some folks that have a DAT library that might have timecode on it. So especially the film restoration folks, this is obviously a big issue for them because everything is based on SMPTE timecode. So we do monitor the timecode. Once again, the DAT module will allow you to do four streams simultaneously, and actually out of the various formats out there, DAT is a pretty reasonable way. If you don't need to monitor, that is, listen in real time, it's fairly easy to manage four DATs and popping in cassettes and begin the digitization of four streams simultaneously. We also get a fair amount of information from the actual DAT machine. We use the Sony 7000 series. There's a 232 port on the back, and there's a fair amount of information about CRC rates, well, actually, C2 errors, mutes, interpolation flags, and actual machine error status. So internally, the Sony machines, if there's a problem inside there, we can capture that all as metadata, which is stored in the log that the import module creates. When I back off from the mic, can you still hear me back there? Because I can sort of hear it. Yeah, okay, I'll try and keep an eye on that. Another sort of specialized application once you go down the path, you don't realize some of the problems that you can run into with dealing with this, but when you're making a transcription, you could have this is a simple example of having a record where you might want to have one file, but you've got a side A or a side B. Probably just as good as an example is when you have a tape that's falling apart on you and you actually have to transfer it in sections and then splice it together to one long recording. So we have something called a BWF merger. One would think that you could simply load those multiple recordings into WaveLab and snip them together, and that'll get you your audio file. But we have metadata, lots of metadata, associated with every one of those clips. So what has to happen is that metadata has to be coalesced, and the timestamps have to be modified relative to the edits that you make to piece together those various clips. So the BWF merger allows you to do that. The overall system flow allows us to first digitize through Quadriga. This is sort of just an overall workflow of how we look at the CubeTech products. From the left, you've got the input stage. It allows you to manage automatically moving that material to a repository. And from there, we have a couple of different jump-off points depending on what you're planning to do it. Of course, if you're simply preserving and storing it, this workflow would end at the repository. But very often, these assets are of some value, whether it's internally to an academic facility or perhaps even more than that when the material is actually commercially viable. So we have two different products that allow you to take that material from the repository that are also integrated with Quadriga to let you process those files. In the first standpoint, the The Audio Cube allows you to restore it for repurposing of that material, perhaps the release of CDs or an online library access for either a university or on the web. We sort of broke down the two products based on either manual or automatic workflow. In reality, the types of processes that we can do are overlapping between the two systems. It depends on exactly what you want to do. The Audio Cube system, we like to call it the one-click link to audio restoration. In fact, once from the import module where you earlier saw the list of the various artifacts, you can launch that file right into WaveLab and begin a restoration process. Now, that might not make sense in the case of an archive where you're simply putting material in a repository, but there are a lot of folks that are trying to get that material out in a commercial environment. So we have a whole list of what we call virtual precision instruments. They're basically plugins that run on the Audio Cube, and they allow you to remove all kinds of problems in a very intuitive fashion. CubeTech was one of the first companies to give real-time auditioning of the removal of clicks, pops, noise filters, notch filters, that type of thing. And these are the examples of tools that relate to steady-state disturbances, debuzz for hum and hiss, hum and harmonics, repair filter for other steady-state tones. Demotorizer is used to remove the E to E leakage that video tape recorders tend to have, Betacams, etc. And that's a good example of, that's such a very sort of niche vertical market to remove motor noise from Betacam recordings. But that's the kind of commitment that we have in providing solutions for people that have very specific problems. Impulse artifacts, clicks, pops, decrackling. Many of you have seen these types of tools on Sonic Solutions and Cedar. We've built something called Depop, which is expressly for the optical soundtracks, because the impulse profile of a optical pop is very different from one from a record. And of course, noise artifacts. Denoiser for tape hiss, and Spectral Dehiss Expert for broadband denoising. And once again, these are all real-time tools. So you listen, you move a knob, you hear, you change accordingly. And a lot of our tools offer also a audition of the program that the tool is removing. So if you're de-clicking something, you can actually click on audition and you just hear the clicks, and it allows you to focus on whether or not you're removing some of the actual program along with those clicks and set thresholds and other parameters accordingly. I think I have a slide out of order. So, yeah, we'll just ignore that. Okay. So we're back to this slide because I've taken a jump off to the Audio Cube and the restoration, and the other approach is that we perform some automatic processes depending on what you're doing and the nature of your facility. Dobbin would allow you to do a fair amount of automatic processing over a large number of sound files. And I'm going to actually invite Jerome to continue on with this part of the presentation.
Okay, thanks, Rob. Just find where this slide has gone to. So I'm going to be talking about Dobbin, the program that's the newest creation from CubeTech and the reason why we're here at this conference. Thank you. Dobbin is an audio rendering farm. So let me just explain that to you. With some simple diagrams, some conceptual and hardware diagrams. to actually explain this concept. I will then show you some of the main tools that are used in the Dobbin system. It consists of several different applications all working together. And then we'll actually do an example using the main tool, which is called the Job Designer. So what is Dobbin? Well, as you can see, Dobbin is a very powerful, flexible, modular tool which can be configured in terms of software and hardware from anything from a small system to handle a small number of files, say hundreds or thousands, or a large system comprising of 8, 16 machines all working in tandem to automatically process hundreds and thousands of audio files automatically. So this is the concept diagram, I guess you could call it. The main bits which the user actually gets to see and uses to control the workflow are at the top, the Job Designer and the Job Manager. Now, both these names probably tell you a little bit what these tools are for. Obviously, the Job Designer is there to create some workflows, design a workflow, and the Job Manager is there to manage the system, to delegate the work. Delegate the work, it will, to the systems at the bottom half. I call the top half the visible system and the bottom half the behind-the-scenes system. The work units and control units also, as the name implies, do the actual work. The control system, the control unit, sorry, is one module, which then, depending on whatever system that you have, will transfer any processes to a work unit or work units. So you can have a control unit or a single work unit or a control unit and, and in this case, multiple work units. So this is another diagram which may make things a little bit clearer. You have a PC at the left, which is where your operator sits. This is a theoretical setup. He will design some schematic workflows on the Job Designer. If he's happy with the fact that his designs are exactly what he needs, he will then save these as presets and use these presets to launch various jobs in the Job Manager. So here you can see a system which bases on one single control unit and, in this diagram, three work units. The control unit will delegate the work to the various work units. And one thing I've forgotten to mention, which is also a visible part of the system, is called the result viewer, which doesn't happen this slide. I will show you that again in a minute. That is the third module, which is a visible part of the system. We've had a lot of discussion during this conference about quality control. And one of the questions we, as a manufacturer of these products, asked to start with, well, what is it that you do with the actual program that you are archiving? A lot of discussion about archiving methods. We have a tool here in this system which helps you with the quality control. You can use the result viewer to get a quick overview of any problems, analog or digital, that you may have in your repository, in your processing, anything like that. So I'll show you that in a minute. Yeah, there's my mouse. Nope. Okay, go back one. Okay, I skipped a slide there, but I'll just quickly tell you some things. The Dobbin system has several different areas, I guess you could call it. This is the Job Designer, which I mentioned before. Now, on the left, you can see a whole list of different processings. There are some general groups, which I'll just quickly explain. There are some audio encoding algorithms. We have some encoding. We have some analysis. File conversion, so if we want to convert our files to BWF format, for example, or WAV64, we can do that with this tool. We have processing. Obviously, we're a signal processing company, so we have some pretty groovy restoration plugins there as well. But I'll show you that more in a hands-on example in a minute. This thing here is the job designer, and this is the brains of the system. You can drag any of the modules from the left-hand side onto the workflow and create, as you say, the workspace, sorry, and create a workflow, as you can see here. Now, this example is taken from just a hypothetical example, which I will actually do live in a minute with Jörg. It is also on the pamphlet that you received in your conference bag at the start of the conference. So if you want to have a closer look, that's the thing there. So it's a very intuitive way to create a workflow using the simple drag and drop method. You have on the top left a input folder, which is the start of your system. And at the bottom, you have some output folders. So obviously, you're going from A to B. You have some processing in the middle. Each of these modules carries with it its own presets and also properties. So either you load some presets, which are delivered by KubeTech as in forms of factory presets, or you actually tweak the parameters yourself. So either way, you have full control of all the parameters. And I'll move along to the next part. This is the result viewer. So this is the thing I was talking about when I mentioned the quality control. You can watch any of these folders for incoming audio material. So at any stage, you have some processing steps. You can use this result viewer to check the current status of your processed audio. Now, you might not be able to see it clearly, but you obviously you can see the WAV files to the right. You have some metadata details on the left, and in the middle, there are some icons and some columns. Now, if you have any problems, clicks, hums, and then other problems in the digital domain, they will be noted here, and you can quickly sort out this column in terms of any of these events. And just make sure that none of your data, we've got to be clear about this, we're talking about thousands of files. So if you can see any problems within a set of thousands of files very quickly, it's a very, very powerful thing to have on your side. So if you wish to further inspect an individual file, if you've got a problem, you can click on the WAV file and bring up this event player, which is kind of like a simplified media player that we provide with the system. On the left, you have the events. They are also colored in this display. And with the help of some easy play buttons, you can just scroll through some of these problems and actually just make an inspection of the problems that you may have. So here we can see, for example, the sample holds, which have been found in this file, are all listed, are all color-coded, and you can click from one to the other, quickly listen into them, and then go on. So a very powerful tool. When you click on any of the files that you have in your error report, so supposing that we have actually found some problems, you can bring up some metadata reports which show all the relevant details to that file. So this view here is just telling you some basic details about the file. I'm not sure if we've got another one. Well, behind there you can see a more extensive, well, you can't see it, but it's behind there, trust me, a more extensive list of the things. And you could actually bring up a report of a single file and show all the events which occur in that file after the analysis. So now I will sort of conclude the formal part of the presentation and actually just shuffle my paper here a bit and show you an example, because the only way to really describe or to show this a program of this type is actually just to do it. I'm not sure. How are we going for time?
We're fine.
Okay. Good. Okay. All right. Well, I'll fly through this one. The task at hand is to process and check the integrity of 10,000 files. Hypothetical example. Okay. We do some automatic restoration. We make some copies for our internet people. We want to bring these stuff online. And obviously, we don't want to lose any of the material. So we always, as we also have heard in this conference many times, make copies, make a copy, make a copy. So that's what we can do with this tool as well. So with the job designer, the first thing I would do is a file security code checker, which will be on the input of this particular process. And we can check if the data that we have actually gotten from our archive is correct, if the MD5 chunk, for example, is passed. We then have some Boolean logic, which will give you the result of that. It's either a yes, no kind of deal. If not, then we can throw away the file, make an error report, do something else, ring some alarm bells. If the check is okay, which we're going to be assuming for most of these files, then the audio can travel down the yes path and continue on its merry way to be processed somewhere else. So let's assume that everything goes okay. Then we can go into the next step, which is some automatic restoration. So I've just quickly put together a declicker, a decrackler, and denoiser. Now, that might not really make that much sense in this kind of work. So you could, for example, put an azimuth, which is maybe a bit more suited for automation, and maybe do some other things to just have this chunk of restoration. And underneath, once the material has been restored automatically, I'd like to make some copies for my web page, for my friends, whatever. I can make a lossless FLAC copy. I can make an MP3. I can make an AC+. So depending on whatever you want to do, I can do all of this in parallel in one process. Is that my time? No. And additionally, I can make some backup copies for every single step of this process. So I have the originals, I have the checked originals, and I have the restored and uncompressed originals. So the whole thing then looks like that. As you can see, the file checking Boolean step at the top, some parallel processing at the bottom, and some restoration in the middle. Now, we were going to show this live, but I don't think we've got time because we'd like to sort of just wrap up the talk. So thank you very much.
I just want to make a couple of comments with a couple of final slides, just to show you some of the project that we're involved with currently. Yeah, time? Okay, all right. We're out of time for some questions? Fair enough. Okay, well, we're involved in some other projects. And I'm happy to talk to you about it later if you'd like. Does anyone have any questions about the presentation? Go ahead, Connor.
Can you import parameters from the BPI restoration tools?
Yes. Modules? Yes, they're essentially compatible. Any other questions?
Maybe I missed it. Does it have proprietary hardware and AV
converters? No, in fact, well, there is some proprietary hardware. I mentioned the I/O box, that big blue box, and that's to interface. But the software runs on a PC that we supply, but it's a Dell PC, so you sort of buy the computer through Dell. And then as far as converters, our attitude always has been that it's really a choice of the archivist. So whatever converters you want, the audio card is an AES card. Any other questions? Go ahead. I hate to say it, but although I may have sounded like a sales guy up here, Mike, I'm actual technical support and product specialist, and the guy that has the sales cap is not with us today. That wasn't, you know, but if anyone's interested, leave me a card and I'll get it to my colleague and he can send some information. I mean, he has a PDF of all that stuff.
Is that it?
Oh, no, thousands of dollars. I think Quadriga systems range between, I guess a basic system would be like, you can get one for like 10,000, right? They can, if you have a lot of modules, and some of the modules, because of the nature of their complexity and interfacing, can be expensive. You can spend $60,000, $80,000 on a system, but you saw how modular they are, so it's a la carte hardware and software. It depends on what you're getting. Oh, that's such a, you know, variable thing based on the processing and, you know, if you're sample rate converting, if you're, if de-clicking, de-crackling, it's a wide range of things.
Come and see us after. Yeah. We'll give you some more details. Come and see us later.
Right. I really appreciate your attention and thanks for having us.